I'm looking at the clock and I'm looking at my notes and I'm trying to decide if we're going to answer the question. The title of the message is Where Do We Come From? But I think I might have too much of a sermon to tell you where you come from today. We might have to wait to another day to get to the third point, but we'll see how it goes. Title of the message is Where Do We Come From? Now, those of you that have been here in the past when I've spoke, know that I've started a study in the book of Genesis. And we've looked at the basics of where it started. In verse 1, in the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. Before there was anything else, God, and we also looked at that is in a plural sense, so the Trinity's there, created. There wasn't anything before. He made it out of nothing. And the heaven and the earth, that encompasses everything we see around us and everything that's way out there. We spent a whole message looking at that. And then we saw that God made light and God made a firmament, which is basically an expanse or a space between the earth and the heavens where He is. And in that, He created an atmosphere that had oxygen, was able to support life. And then he created dry land, like all of a sudden, and this land was able to support plant life and created all kinds of plants. And each one of those plants was unique and distinct after its own kind. And so that brings us up to where we're going to start today. We've got land, we've got plants growing, but at this point, there's no animal life. Now you might say, what's this have to do with anything, Dave? I mean, you know, I went to public school, and I did, and I was all educated on how, you know, there was this nothing, and then there was something blew up out of this nothing that they don't know where it came from, and then amino acids appeared, and they turned into a protein, and then things, live things came, and somehow we ended up with plants, and we ended up with animals, and there's this big, long theory of how this all happened. And it takes more faith to believe that than what it takes to believe this. There is just too many problems with the theory of evolution. And so we're going to continue looking at this. Verse 14, and God said, and here again we see, what does God do during the creation process? It's not like He takes His hand and He gets some mud and He stirs it around or whatever. He speaks. And God said, let there be lights in the firmament of heaven to divide the day from the night. Okay, what we have here is the creation of the sun, moon, stars, and by extension, the other planets as well. Now, some of you are probably sitting there and saying, but I thought we already saw in verse 1 or verse 3 that God already created light. And now you're going to tell me that He's creating the sun. Now, how does that make any sense? How can you have light before you have the sun? Well, that's a good question. The original light that God created in verse 3 was probably a display of God's divine glory. You think when the children of Israel were in the wilderness and the bright light that led them, the Shekinah glory of God. Or you might think in the book of Revelation chapter 21 where it talks about in the New Jerusalem, there's no need of the sun because God is the light thereof. So that original light was probably light that was coming from God. And so what He's creating here in verse 14 is actually light givers. Okay, and that would be the way it could be translated from the Hebrew. So these light givers are suspended in this expanse or this space that's out from the earth. And then our verse 14 continues, why God gave them. Let them be for signs. Now the word signs there, the Hebrew word could be translated beacons or signals. And of the reasons given, this is the one that gives commentators the most problem explaining. How are these stars, sun, moon, how are they signs or signals in the sky? Well, there's some people that go and they want to tie this into the zodiac signs and make some pretty creative things out of that. But we're not going to go there. But how are these stars used for signs or signals? Well, how did ships used to navigate before they had GPS and all the technology? They used the stars. How did surveyors used to survey? They found where they were based on that. So these planets, these stars and all were for signs. But it also says they were given for seasons. What makes the seasons? You know, we've gone from, seemed like winter to summer and this spring somewhere in between there. But what makes the seasons? Well, how's the Earth sit? It sits on a 23-degree angle on its axis. And as it rotates around, and depending on where it's at, depends how close it is, and that changes the temperature. So the sun and moon and all this stuff, that's how we get our seasons. Then it continues and says, for days. What makes days? Well, what's the Earth doing? Going around in a circle. Takes basically 24 hours for it to go around. And so again, these planets are giving us days. It also says it's made for years. What makes years? That's how the Earth revolving around the sun takes 365 and a quarter and some odd minutes, days, to go around. Again, as God said, they're given for signs, for days, for years. And just throw this in, it doesn't say in the text, but what makes the month? Well, that's pretty closely related to how long the moon is orbiting the Earth, is a month. So, God gave these, and what are they really for? They're for measurement of time. Now think back, and where we're at in Genesis, God had always existed. But God didn't need time. Okay? So He's creating a measurement of time because we as human beings, we measure time. Sometimes I think we get too worried about time, but we measure time. Now one thing that isn't mentioned in measure of time here is weeks. What planet has anything to do with how long a week is? None of them. That's a different thing. God created the Earth in 6 days, and then He rested. It's another pattern that He gave us. Let's continue. Verse 15, and let them be for lights in the firmament of heaven to give light upon the earth. And it was so. So when we saw in verse 14 that God spoke, and then, boom, there it is. It happens. Verse 16, and God made two great lights, the greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night. Now we know that the moon reflects the light of the sun, that it doesn't actually produce light. But when it says to have rule over, what that means is to have dominion over, or to be the dominant thing. If you look out in the sky, the dominant thing you're going to see is not some star from some other galaxy, but you're going to see the sun. At night, the dominant thing is going to see is the moon. God put them up there. But then you get this phrase at the end of verse 16 that I find really, really interesting. And He made the stars also. Just sort of threw that in extra. We just made a few stars. You know, how many stars are there? Well, there's actually millions of stars. And some of these stars are really big. To put things in proportion, the volume of the sun is roughly a million times the volume of the Earth. But there are stars that are a million times larger and brighter than the sun. They don't look that bright because they're a long ways away. Now, some of you folks are signed up to go to the Creation Museum, okay? And a couple years ago, Beth and I went, and I enjoyed the museum. And I really enjoyed the gardens. But the thing that I enjoyed the most was the planetarium. I mean, it just amazed me. And planetarium is basically a theater where they show you space. And you're sitting there, and you have this thing all, it's just like you're going out into space and you see all these stars. And when they get to explaining how many stars there are and how far away they are, and this verse says, and God just made the stars, just sort of threw them in extra. And so not only do we have stars in our planet or in our galaxy, the Milky Way, but then you go on out further and then there's other galaxies. And basically a galaxy is a, you know, sun and stars and planets that are held together by a gravitational pull that holds them together. And then there's more, and the further out you go, and there's more, and there's more, and there's stars that are single stars, and stars that are binary stars, and there's stars that are in clusters. And God just sort of threw them in extra. So God created stars. And you know, the stars are like snowflakes. They say that every one is different. Now, the closest star, it takes 4.5 years for the light to travel to the Earth. 4.5 years. It takes 8.5 minutes from the light to travel to the sun to the Earth. The closest star is 4.5 years. So it's a long, long way out there. I just want to try to give you an idea of how immense the creation is and how great our God is, that He could make all this and just put it out there. And you've got planets and it's all out there. You know what? We never see on the news that, oh, these ran into each other and collided and, you know, and made problems. God put it out there. Now, evolution would tell you that all this stuff, and this is a real simplified version, but all these things, they all came from one source. And there was this great big explosion from the sun or wherever, and it all blew up and blew these pieces out there, and somehow they got out there, and then they got into orbits and different gravitational pulls, and they're all rotating around. Well, now, if something explodes into a lot of pieces, you would expect those individual pieces to have the same composition as the original thing. The sun is, I haven't been looking at my notes. I'm completely lost in my notes, but we'll just go. The sun is, I think it's 99% hydrogen and helium. The Earth is 1%. How can that be if they came from the same thing? Three of the planets rotate in the opposite rotation of the rest of the planets. If they all came from the same thing, it would be more logical that they would spin in the same direction. God put it all out there. Now, one of the problems that Christians are sometimes confronted with is, but okay, so you're telling me these stars are out there. Millions, and it takes millions of years or thousands of years for the light to get to the Earth. And you're going to stand up here and you're going to tell me that you believe that creation is less than 10,000 years ago is when it happened, and yet you got light that's shining out there that came from a million years ago. Now, how does that work? Okay? Logical question, right? Three parts to the answer. They can only accurately measure the distance of the stars to 330 light years. A light year is the distance that a ray of light will travel in 1 year. They can only go 330 years. After that, it becomes calculations and a guess. Number two, Einstein's theory of relativity says that time is not constant. And this gets really complicated, but there are some things where maybe time isn't what it seems to be. But here's the one answer that I think is the key answer. If God could make the sun and God could make the stars, what's to say that He had to make the source of the light before He made the beam? Couldn't He have created the beam of light at the same time that He made the light, what we perceive as the light source? Because in reality, God is the source of the light, not the thing that He made, but He's the source of light. So it's very conceivable in my mind that God just, you know, He made, it's like, you know, we turn a flashlight on and the light shines and we think it comes from here, but God could have made the light and the flashlight at the same time. So that's a pretty simplified explanation, but we're going to let it at that. So all these things are out there. They're rotating, they're orbiting, and God made it that way. Verse 17, and God set them in the firmament of the heaven to give light upon the earth, and to rule over the day and over the night, and to divide the light from the darkness. So God put it out there. And the idea to have rule over, to have dominion. And the end of verse 18, and God saw that it was good. And as we've gone through the other days of creation, when God got to the end of it, it was good. Everything that God made was good. Verse 19, and the evening and morning were the fourth day. Now we talked the last time, and I'm not sure, maybe the time before, but when it says the evening and the morning, that's the idea that the earth is rotating a 24-hour period. In the Hebrew, in the Old Testament, when it gives a numerical number before the word day, it means 24 hours. I mean, sometimes the word day in the Old Testament is used speaking of a long period of time, but whenever there's a number given, it's a 24-hour period of time. Now, some people have a problem with that. You know, God couldn't do all that in 24 hours. Why not? I mean, how big is your God? That's what a lot of the problem is. We want to make God like us, to think like we do, with the same limitations that we have. But God's not that way. Let's continue. So that was the first point. That was cosmic bodies. Now we're moving on to the second point. And here we're going to talk about the critters. All right, where are we at here? Verse 20. And God said, and here we have it again, and we see God is speaking, let the waters bring forth abundantly the moving creature that hath life, and the fowl that may fly above the earth in the open firmament of the heaven. All right, so you remember earlier God had separated the waters from the dry land, and now he creates water. And it says that let the waters bring forth abundantly. Now, some people have the idea that that means that the water had something to do with making these things. Literally, it could be translated, the waters swarmed with swarming things. In other words, God filled the water with these creatures. And then we also see that he made, you know, the birds that can fly above the earth. Continue in verse 21. And God created great whales. Now, when it says great whales, the word there sometimes is translated dragon, or it could be a large sea creature. So not only did he make fish, that he made large animals that lived in the water as well. It could have included whale, but it could have been other things as well. And some people think that this could have included dinosaurs, who later went extinct, but there could have been some dinosaurs involved in this mix. And we'll talk about whales a little bit more a little later. Verse continues, and every living creature that moveth. Now there's an interesting thing here. We see that God created. And I think the last time I mentioned it, sometimes you see that God makes things and sometimes God creates things. There's a difference. When God creates, the idea is he's starting with something new, something that hasn't existed before. When he makes things, he's taking pre-existing components and making and reconfiguring them and making something else. But as we see here, that God is creating animal life. Early on, he had created the basic things and he made plants from that. But now he's creating animal life. He's making animal life is different than plant life. There's a conscience. It can move. It has some consciousness and some awareness. So God is, the Hebrew word is the idea of a soul. So God is creating not just physical things, but creatures that have an inner being. And then we'll see later that he goes a step further when he creates man, and he makes a spiritual aspect with man. So God is creating these great whales and living creatures that moveth, and the waters brought forth abundantly after their kind. All right, so we've got all kinds of animals that God is creating. I went to page 1 instead of page 3. All right. He made all kinds of fish. Now think about how many different kinds of fish are there. There's big fish and there's little fish, and some fish eat vegetation and some fish eat other things, and there's fish that need salt water and fish that need fresh water. And they were all made after their own kind. Now one thing that's really interesting about fish is, how do they breathe? You put a fish in water, they live. You take a fish out of water, and they die. How's that work? It's not going to work for me. With fish, they take the water in through their mouth. And then they have gills. And there's oxygen that's absorbed into the water. You know, if you have a little fish tank, you have a little thing in there that bubbles and puts oxygen in the tank. That's to put more oxygen in there available for the fish. The fish takes the water in, extracts the oxygen out, and that's how a fish lives. It can't breathe on straight air like we have. So God made fish, it says, after its own kind. Now we mentioned the whale. You know, it was mentioned here. And whales live in water, but they don't work that way. They're made after their own kind. They're different. If a whale would breathe through its mouth, it would drown. But a whale has to open its mouth to eat. So how does a whale breathe? It has a blowhole, or depending on different species, might have two blowholes. They go up to the surface, and the whale takes in air. It can hold its breath for 30 minutes. How does it do that? Well, it has large capacity for one thing, but also a whale is very efficient. It can use 90 to 95% of the oxygen out of the air that it breathes. Whereas a human being, we only use 10 to 15% of the oxygen that our bodies take in. God created each one after its own kind. How did these all evolve into the different ways? It's a lot easier to explain that God made it after his kind. Our verse also said that every winged fowl after its kind. I know there's a number of people in here like bird watchers. How many people would admit that you're a bird watcher? All right, I see a good many hands. All right, I knew there was a lot of them. There's a lot of variety in birds. Would you agree with that? I mean, around our house, we've got starlings and blackbirds and sparrows and cardinals and wild turkeys. And a couple months ago, I saw an eagle out in the field. I mean, and there's just so many different kinds. And each one has its own distinct characteristics. I'll give you an example. A woodpecker. Why does a woodpecker act like it does? Do you like beating your head against a tree? No, I certainly don't. Well, think about this. Now, how does a woodpecker hang on this tree and beat his head on and not fall off? He has very special made claws that he's able to dig into the tree and hang on the way God created him. A woodpecker can peck up to 500 times a minute, which is amazing. That's like 8 times a second. When a woodpecker's head hits the tree, it's going 13 miles an hour. His head moves about this far. That's an incredible rate of acceleration, better than any NASCAR race car. I mean, that thing is going, and it's just back and forth and back and forth. I'd get a headache. But the woodpecker doesn't. Why? Because God has created a way that its brain is cushioned. It doesn't affect it. And they're not dumb. God's made them that they can protect themselves. Some woodpeckers are delightful treats for certain kind of snakes. And the woodpeckers know that if they poke some holes around their main hole, that the resin will leak out of the tree. And if the snake tries to climb up the tree, it can't get through that to get to the woodpecker. And you're going to tell me that this just evolved. It just happened. God created woodpeckers. Now, birds are very interesting in another sense, in that their bones are hollow. Did you know that? Probably did. Now, a human bone has marrow in the bone. Birds are hollow. And some of the bones in birds actually are connected to the lungs, and it's an extra reservoir for air while they're flying. And you're going to tell me that this just all happened and it all evolved from the same source. Another interesting thing about birds. You know how in most species of animals, you have the X and Y chromosome? And the X and the Y is the male. And the double X is the female. Somehow, birds got it backwards. The female is the X and Y, and the male is the double X. But evolution will tell you they all came from the same source. I think the explanation that each was after its own kind makes a whole lot more sense to me. Back to Scripture. End of verse 21, and God saw that it was good. And 22, and God blessed them, saying, be fruitful and multiply and fill the seas and let the fowl multiply on the earth. So God wants them to populate this earth. And it's interesting, we saw that the water swarmed with life. And we get the idea that when God created the animal life, that he made a whole lot of them. Not necessarily that he made just one of each species, but that he may have made lots at one time. But he wants them to fill the earth. In verse 23, in the evening and the morning were the fifth day. Again, 24-hour period, God made the fish and the fowl. Moving on, verse 24. We're still talking about critters. And God said, let the earth bring forth the living creature after its kind. And this is the land animals. Cattle, creeping things, and the beast of the earth after its kind. So, what's the difference? It lists three different general types of animals here. Well, cattle would be the domesticatable animals. The animals that get along with people, that can, you know, can that we like and they like us. Okay? And then you have the creeping things, you know, the gnarly little bugs and the rodents and the low life. But, you know, all of those have a plan in God's system. They all have a purpose and a function, and it all works together. And then it says the beast of the earth. And this is talking about the wild animals that don't fall in one of the other categories. The verse says in 24, and let the earth bring forth. What's it mean, the earth bring forth? Did the earth make them? No. These creatures are made from the same components that the earth is out of. Remember when the verses that talk about when a person passes from this, you're going to return to dust? We're basically made out of dirt. That's what this is saying. They're made out of dirt, but God made them that way. So God made each of these after its kind. Now think about this. I mean, some animals, like a bear. What does a bear do? A bear hibernates. But, you know, a lot of animals don't hibernate. How can your body function slow down in a cool temperature and you're still alive? It doesn't work for a human being. An elephant. Think of an elephant. It's got an oversized nose, right? Nose is big enough, it can hold 7 gallons of water. It can pick up little things. It's incredibly strong. And that just randomly developed. The giraffe. You know, evolution will tell you, well, they had to reach to get the high leaves off the trees, and that's how it occurred. It makes a whole lot more sense to me that God created each thing after its own kind. You know, God could have made one animal or whatever, but he likes variety, and he's given us a wonderful world to live in with a lot of variety, and the variety of life shows his power and his creativity. Different animals just live in different ways, function in different ways. Each one is after its own kind. So we are going to get to the third point, and that is the citizens. So God made the animals, and this is the second half of day 6. In verse 26, and God said, let us make man in our image. Again, God's speaking, and he says, let us? Plural. Who's us? Well, we already talked about this back in verse 1, that was plural. But the us here, is that God and the angels? No, the angels weren't part of that. It was the Father. And in verse 2, you see the Spirit moved on the water. The Holy Spirit was involved. In Colossians chapter 1, I think it's 16 and 17, it talks about how the Son was involved in creation. So God says, let us. We see the Trinity here. Let us make man in our image. What does it mean to be made in the image of God? The Hebrew word for image is a word that's related to the idea of a carving. You take and you carve something to look like something else. We're carved or we're shaped in the likeness of God. How is the human beings in the likeness of God? Well, first of all, we have a moral conscience. We have awareness of what's around us more so than what animals do. Before the fall, man was holy, incredibly smart. After the fall, things sort of went downhill a little bit. Human beings have the ability to love. They have the ability to reason, to think, to solve problems. They have emotions. The human beings have the ability to develop relationships and friendships. Human beings will exist eternally like God does. After you're born, you continue to exist forever. We're created and made in the image and likeness of God. Verse 26 continues, and let them have, and that's talking about, when it says man, that's talking about mankind, the human race. Let them, mankind, have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. So what's God saying here? The man is to have dominion over the animals. And in our world today, there's getting to be some confusion in that area. If you believe that we all came from the same goo, then what makes humans superior? But if you believe that man was created in the image of God, and that God gave him dominion over the earth and over the animals, that makes us superior. Now, the fall has caused people to make choices that aren't necessarily always right, but God has still given us dominion over the animals. And we need to be careful that we don't get to the point, as I think is happening in a lot of places, where we worship the creature more than the Creator. God gave us dominion over the animals. We shouldn't be worshiping them, but be worshiping the one that created them. So God gave man dominion over the animals. Verse 27. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him. And here, this is, again, is this Hebrew way of you say something, you turn around and you say it a little bit different for emphasis to implant it that what you're saying. In the image of God created he him. Male and female created he them. And we're not going to spend time getting into that because we're going to do that when we get to chapter 2 of how that God created male and female. And he created male and female. I don't have to go any further than that. I think you know where what I'm implying with that. All right, verse 28. And God blessed them. And God said, be fruitful and multiply. Now here, God has made two people, Adam and Eve, which we'll see in chapter 2, and they are to fill the earth. The King James says to replenish the earth. The word should be translated fill. To replenish gives you the idea that there was some and they got lost, and then there got more people, you know, they had to replace the ones that were there. But it's better translated to be fruitful, multiply, and fill the earth. God wants, he wanted the people to fill the earth. And the verse there, and then it says, and subdue it. God has given the human race the authority and dominion over the earth. Not just the animals, but over the earth. And God has created it, and we're to use it for his glory. Now, human nature, sometimes that doesn't always work out that way. But again, God gave people dominion over the earth. Have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the fowl of the air and over every living thing that moveth. Human beings were the pinnacle of God's creation. Remember, we'll see that as we get into chapter 2 in the Garden of Eden. But man was to oversee the garden, to sort of manage it for him. That's what God is talking about here. Verse 29, and God said, behold, I have given you every herb-bearing seed which is upon the face of the earth, and every tree in which is the fruit of the tree yielding seed to you, it shall be for meat. So at this point, they were vegetarians. They were to eat, you know, the fruit and that type of thing. When it says for meat, that means for food. And so there's some people that say, well, you know, according to the Genesis, God wants us to only eat vegetables. And they'll build a case on this verse. Well, before you get too far down that road, you need to remember that after the flood, I think it's in chapter 3 or chapter 9, verse 3, then God says that they're allowed to eat animals. What happened? What changed? Well, at this point, in the initial creation, there's no death. What brought death into the world? Sin. It wasn't till man sinned that there was death. So the animals didn't eat each other. The people didn't eat the animals. It wasn't till after the curse of sin that death occurred. And so they were fed by the vegetation. Verse 30, I've already basically summarized that. But the beasts of the field, I mean, they were to eat the plants as well. Verse 31, and God saw everything that he made, and behold, it was very good. You know, up to this point, it's been good. But when you put the whole thing together in a package, it's very good. And the evening and morning were the sixth day. Now, it starts out, and we get to this point, and it's good, and it sounds like it's a great story, right? Well, you look at the world around us today, it's not so great. I mean, it is amazing the way the world works. But the human race chose to disobey God, chose to rebel against God, and then the curse came upon all of creation, and it has an effect on everything that's around us. But the way that God originally made it, it was very good. Now you might be saying, Dave, you know, this isn't a very evangelistic message. You know, I mean, what does this have to do with the gospel? And I just want to challenge you. We live in a world where most people have been taught, for a couple generations now, evolution. They don't have any concept of a God as a creator. And if there's not a God that's a creator, why are they accountable to any God? Who is this God that has any say in their life? And so, I think it's New Tribe's mission. When they go into a new field, they start in Genesis and they lay the foundation that there's a God, that he created everything, and how that man sinned and rebelled. As you talk to people around you, acquaintances, they may not have any biblical background at all. They might need a little bit of a foundation of hey, there even is a God. And because he created me, I'm accountable to him. So I want to encourage you. God has made each of us. And his creation is fabulous. And we need to thank him for that. But if you don't have a relationship with him, he loved us enough that he sent his son Jesus into this world to die, that he could restore this relationship with us. And eventually he's going to make it all back like it was here. You get clear at the end of the Bible, you're going to get back to the same thing that it was there. So to encourage you, if you've never come into a relationship with Jesus Christ and with God, I'd encourage you to talk to one of us pastors, and we'd love to explain that a little more. But I just want you today to thank God for his power and majesty and all the things that he's created. Let's go to the Lord in prayer.